Need more proof that cutting the U.S. budget's going to be tough?
Just look at Central Athens today.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It is Wednesday, June 15th.
Coming up, the British government today unveils the biggest bank shakeup in a generation.
Regulators put Wall Street reform on ice.
And if you're going to rob a fast food joint, at least eat everything you take.
A cautionary tale ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
In Greece today, police have fired tear gas at tens of thousands of protesters on strike, angry over more austerity measures. That's just a couple of days after S&P downgraded Greece's debt rating to the lowest of any country on earth with sovereign debt. And yields today on two-year Greek debt have reached yet another record high.
Richard DeKayser is an economist with the Parthenon Group. He's with us from Boston, as he is every Wednesday. Richard, it seems like there are protests going on all the time in Athens. What's different now?
Well, they're bigger, more people, and they're more violent. And I think what's happening now is that the stakes are going up. People in Greece have already made very large sacrifices. Pensions have been curtailed. Retirement ages have been postponed. Wages have been cut. And they need to do more in order to meet the so-called conditionality requirements of their creditors, namely the European Union and the IMF, as well as the European Central Bank. More cuts are on the way, and that's what people are taking to the streets about. They feel like they've had enough, but to get the funds flowing, they need to do more.
And connect that to what's going on in Washington with the debt ceiling negotiations, which are expected to lead to a deal that would involve big spending cuts. Is Greece a canary in the coal mine for us?
No, I think the analogy is very, very limited. Greece really has a fixed problem. They're running out of cash. They cannot go on unless they receive further credit from their creditors. The U.S. has ample reserves. Their foreign investors have indicated every desire to buy our debt. Our problem is really self-inflicted. That is to say that the Congress hasn't allowed us to, or may not allow us to, increase our indebtedness. So totally different situations, only remotely similar.
Richard DeKayser, economist at the Parthenon Group, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Take care.
The Commodities Futures Trading Commission says it needs 6 more months to finish writing new rules required by the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Law. That's just the latest delay in the implementation of Wall Street reform. Marketplace's Jeff Horwich is with us now to talk about it this morning. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Steve.
So what's being put off this time?
Well, these are the rules for trading in derivatives, also called swaps. But even that's up in the air because, in fact, writing a formal definition of swap has itself been delayed. Generally speaking, these are financial bets that companies make to protect against other kinds of risk. Could be based on interest rates, wheat prices, weather patterns. Christopher Whalen of Institutional Risk Analytics calls derivatives an unregulated ghetto.
It's like playing poker without any chips. You know, you would play poker if you didn't have to bet, right? And that's exactly what these banks were doing.
Dodd-Frank calls for a bunch of rules that are supposed to make derivatives trading more transparent and less risky.
Is this delay, Jeff, typical for what we've been seeing generally for writing Dodd-Frank rules?
Well, here's the scorecard. According to the law firm Davis Polk, 28 deadlines missed so far, 115 rules proposed on time but not finalized. Banking consultant Bert Ely is actually fine with the delays.
It is more important to slow down and get it right. Quite frankly, Dodd-Frank put in place unrealistic deadlines in many cases, and we're now seeing that.
24 new rules have been finished, including one that requires companies to let shareholders vote on executive pay. 218 more Dodd-Frank rules still have their deadlines yet to come.
All right. Marketplace's Jeff Horwich joining us this morning. Jeff, thanks.
You're welcome.
The government reported today consumer prices rose slightly last month, 0.2%. Food, clothing, and car prices all rose for the month, but by the slowest rate in 6 months.
Foreigners increased their purchases of long-dated U.S. securities in April. It's the first time that's happened in 5 months. China raised its holdings of U.S. government debt.
The online music service Pandora pulled in $16 a share yesterday in its initial public offering. That's about twice as much as expected for the so far unprofitable company that boasts 94 million registered users.
Find more numbers, stocks, stories, and more at our website, marketplace.org.
show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
There is a big conference going on today in suburban Washington, D.C. to look at the future of the Postal Service and whether, given the changes in the way we communicate these days, there's even a need for such an agency.
Now, snail mail has competition from electronic mail and from UPS and FedEx, too, and that's put the post office in peril, Sally Herships reports.
Phil Herr keeps tabs on the Postal Service's financial conditions for the Government Accountability Office, and he sums things up this way.
There's less, quote-unquote, money in the mail.
More and more people are paying bills online. And with the recession, advertisers are sending fewer mailers. But it's hard for the Postal Service to lower costs. There may be less mail, but it still has to be delivered.
It's very costly to go to 131 million addresses 6 days a week.
So industry leaders are holding a conference, Postal Vision 2020, to brainstorm the service's future.
Clearly, it's going to have to do something different because it won't be delivering mail the way it is today in 10 years.
John Callen is managing director of industry consultant Ursa Major, the company running the conference. Google's vice president Vint Cerf is giving the keynote speech, and startups like online bill pay service Manila will also be there. With all this Silicon Valley presence, you might wonder if hungry tech companies have designs on the mail business. But John Callen says no. They're really there to help the Postal Service find a new approach.
These kind of companies think differently, and they think about open platforms, collaboration, and they encourage teamwork.
And teamwork may be one solution. The GAO's Phil Herr says many postal services in Europe are working with the private sector. They're moving into grocery stores and pharmacies and closing expensive standalone post offices. In the meantime, the U.S. Postal Service says it expects to lose over $8 billion this year. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Now the Marketplace global perspective. The British government today is set to unveil the biggest shakeup in U.K. banks in a generation.
The change is aimed at heading off yet another financial crisis. The key part of the plan is to separate retail banking from riskier investment banking. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Is this then breaking up the big banks that are too big to fail so they don't have to be bailed out by the taxpayer?
No, this is halfway between that, breaking up the big universal banks and leaving them as they are. What this plan would do is ring-fence the retail banking part, the bit that's vital to the economy, mm-hmm. holding deposits, making loans and moving money around and so on. This plan would put a firewall between that and the risky investment banking, the trading in derivatives, for example, so that in a crisis, retail banking can be quickly hived off by the authorities and protected.
And will that, Stephen, actually prevent another financial meltdown?
Well, it won't prevent a crisis. It won't prevent a big investment banking operation blowing up within a universal bank. But bank analyst Ralph Silver of SRN says it would soften the blow to the taxpayers.
The amount that we need to save or to rescue the banks would actually be significantly less. So this is a compromise solution. And I think most of the banks will complain, but eventually they'll accept it.
And he says he thinks this could set an international trend. Other countries could follow suit. The US, for example, with big universal banks like Citigroup and Bank of America could go for this. But he says setting up this ring fence is going to be expensive. Who's going to pay? Not the bankers. It'll mean that retail banking is going to get quite a bit more expensive for the customers.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Meanwhile, one European bank is being forced to get smaller to avoid being bailed out again. One of the biggest online banks here in the U.S., ING Direct, is expected to be sold off today by its Dutch parent.
Leading contenders reportedly include Capital One and General Electric. The irony of the ING sale now, and Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon.
The Amsterdam-based banking and insurance giant is essentially under orders to get smaller. That was a condition for the bailout it got from the Dutch government. Under pressure from the European Commission, it's agreed to sell off assets representing 45% of its balance sheet, and that includes its online banking business here in the U.S.
What the European regulator was saying is sell off some of your non-core, non-European businesses to generate cash so we don't have to bail you out as much.
Bart Narter is a banking industry analyst at Celent. He says European regulators were able to push for the bank to downsize by selling overseas assets. But here in the U.S., there were no such conditions. In fact, too-big-to-fail banks were encouraged to merge.
the reason that banks got bigger in the U.S. is when there was a troubled institution, you needed an even larger, healthier institution to buy it out and bring up capital reserves.
Thus, the takeovers of such banks as Wachovia and Washington Mutual. Presuming an American company buys ING Direct, yet another U.S. financial institution will be getting bigger. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Next week, Tunisia's deposed president will be tried in absentia on embezzlement and drug smuggling charges.
There are lots of global examples of politicians lining their pockets at taxpayer expense. In Britain, some members of parliament were jailed for claiming stipends they weren't even entitled to.
And in Tanzania, a similar scandal has some lawmakers wanting to give back what they say are their ill-gotten gains. The BBC's Louise Redvers reports.
Tanzania is one of Africa's poorest countries, where millions live on the breadline without access to running water or electricity. But despite these pressing needs, according to the main opposition party, 13% of the country's budget is spent on stipends for members of parliament. Zito Kabwe is deputy secretary of the main opposition Chadema party. He's launched a campaign to give up what is called his daily sitting allowance of $50, which he receives for attending meetings in parliament on top of his main salary. The money, he says, should be diverted to charity work and social funds instead.
Our country is very poor. More than a third of Tanzanians live below the poverty line. So the politicians have to show the way by cutting these expenses. They're very unnecessary. And direct the money to development work.
Kabwe's idea has sparked much debate in the Tanzanian parliament, although most lawmakers appear to support the motion. But this week, the clerk of the National Assembly told members that once they get the money into their personal accounts, they can spend it any way they wish, including on charity work. In South Africa, I'm the BBC's Louise Redfers for Marketplace.
All right, now to the lighter side. Steve, if you're going to rob a fast food joint, it's always very important not to leave a trail of fast food to your hideout. In Shawnee, Oklahoma.
I'm taking notes, by the way.
That's good. The police had no trouble locating 18-year-old Dakota Lasley after a robbery at a Sonic drive-in. They found Dakota in a house two blocks away, and all they had to do to catch up with him was follow a trail of foot-long hot dogs, hot dog buns, chicken breasts, and, of course, corn dogs.
Wow. On Capitol Hill today, the House Education Committee will take up a bill to repeal some new rules for colleges that get federal student aid. Now, those rules would give the government more say on things such as distance learning programs and just how much credit students should get for their classes.
But some lawmakers say the rules go too far. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports from the Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore.
One of the new rules will define a credit hour so that an algebra credit at one college is worth roughly the same at another. The federal government awards financial aid based on credits, and it doesn't want schools awarding excess credits to speed students to graduation or charge more money. The rule defines a credit hour as 1 hour of class and 2 hours of outside work each week, or for an online course or internship, an equivalent amount of work.
With the definition, they will know nothing more than they know now.
Sylvia Manning is president of the Higher Learning Commission, which accredits many for-profit colleges. She says groups like hers already police educational quality.
Saying how long the student sat in the classroom or how much homework the student does doesn't tell you anything about whether the student learned anything.
Manning's group has been criticized for approving a for-profit college that offered 9-credit courses. She says the group granted initial accreditation, but required the university to fix the problem. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Drug maker Pfizer heads to federal court today to defend its $1 billion a year moneymaker Viagra. That little blue pill is scheduled to go off patent next year, which means generic drug makers will be able to produce similar pills and sell them at a big discount.
But if Pfizer gets its way in this court case, the patent could be extended until 2019. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Gregory Warner reports.
One now legendary day in the early 1990s, Pfizer scientists discovered that their new drug for blood pressure was causing men to have spontaneous erections. Pfizer immediately applied for a new patent, renamed the drug Viagra, and the rest is history. The question in court today is whether that second patent is valid. It hinges on a legal concept called non-obviousness. Scott Hemphill is a law professor at Columbia University.
So the fight in non-obviousness often comes down to whether some new invention could have been seen by anybody.
Anybody, in this case, with experience in drug manufacturing.
Pfizer's reaction, as you would expect, is, well, if this is so easy to figure out, why didn't anybody do it until we did?
In fact, drug companies often try to find new uses for old drugs to extend their patent protection. It's called evergreening. John Iwanicki is a patent lawyer at Banner & Witkoff.
Evergreening means that you keep your patent portfolio evergreen by filing applications after the initial application on the compound to applications directed to different uses for the compound, different methods of making the compound, different forms of the compound.
For instance, the new chewable Viagra that Pfizer is selling in Mexico. If Pfizer wins this court fight, it'll have another 7 years of billion-dollar sales. If generic manufacturer Teva wins, Viagra pills get cheaper for the consumer. But while the art of evergreening can keep pills priced high, it also fosters continued innovation, says Bob Goldberg at the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest. Not long ago, Pfizer extended its patent for Viagra to treat a potentially fatal heart disease called infantile pulmonary hypertension.
They found that Viagra, because it pumps blood supply to the body in low doses, was very, very effective. And I think they got an additional 6 months of patent life.
The patent court found that a drug for erectile dysfunction used to save newborns? Not obvious. In Philadelphia, I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
And finally, bed bugs, Jeremy, have finally hit the big time in the nuisance category. The tiny, itchy pests now have insurance policies working against them in New York City. That's where hotel owners and landlords have been paying big bucks. You know this. You've been reporting on this, right? In the Empire State Building, and I think the Goldman Sachs building was hit by bed bugs, right? Well, they've been paying a lot of money to get rid of those bugs, and they've suffered millions of dollars in business losses. Some buildings have had to close.
Yeah.
Some hotels, of course, couldn't rent out rooms.
Some stores as well.
That's right. Well, big insurer Aon will offer those policies now. Yes, for bed bugs. No reaction as yet, though, from ants, fleas, or spiders.
Well, it could cost them big time.
Yeah, it really could.
Yeah, in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Enjoy your Wednesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.